Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. St. Francis was a man of his times, but we hear of the legacy of his message and of the kind of example the poor little man of Assisi offers mankind today. Father Jim Brand explains why one and one isn't two. It's infinity. When I heard that the Franciscans were celebrating an important anniversary, I jumped at the chance to do a program on my favourite saint. October the 4th is St. Francis' feast day, and the year 2006 marks the 800th anniversary of Francis' writing of the first rule, the rule that guides all Franciscans in living their life in pursuit of their mission. Celebrations are also taking place within the run-up to the 2009 anniversary of the foundation of the order. So many are the perspectives one can take when outlining a portrait of the little poor man of Assisi and of the incredible legacy he has left. But where does one start? I looked up the address and telephone number of a Franciscan friary here in Rome and couldn't believe my luck when someone with a distinctly American accent answered the telephone and agreed to grant me an interview.
My name is Joe Rosansky. I am a friar from Holy Name Province in the United States. I'm a friar for about 30 years now, and my first work was in Brazil. I worked for 10 years in Brazil. Then I went back to the States. I finished my different kinds of work in the States about a year and a half ago, and I've been here at our General Curia now for about a year and 2 months or 3 months, and I'm the director of our JPIC office, the Office for Justice, Peace, and the Integrity of Creation.
Integrity of Creation. How beautiful. I'd like to hear more about that. But first I asked, who was St. Francis?
For me, Francis was a person of his times. If you look and see the way that Francis lived and responded to what was going on around him, I think that in many ways he was very modern in the sense that he read what was going on around him. He understood, maybe not, I'm sure he didn't understand all the details, but he saw going on around him the huge changes in society, and he responded to them. His choice of poverty, for sure, was a spiritual choice. He chose it because Jesus also chose to be poor, chose to come to earth, etc., etc. But Francis also gave up his position. They were part of the Nouveau Riche, his family. His father was a cloth merchant, but Francis gave that up and decided on a life of poverty, of extreme poverty. As a matter of fact, that was one of his big discussions with the church. The church felt that that wasn't possible, to live that kind of a life of poverty. And Francis, and also Claire, Claire, as she followed in the footsteps of Francis, they both insisted that this was not only possible, but it was something that should be done because it was following more closely in the footsteps of Jesus. So I would say that, Francis was responding to what he saw around him, the extreme poverty of many people. And, he was looking to them and also looking to this idea of living spiritually in the footsteps of Jesus.
And all Franciscans still do just that, follow in the footsteps of Jesus and of Francis, of course. And one of the vows they take to be able to do this is the vow of poverty. What sense, I asked Brother Joe, does such a vow have in today's world?
That's actually a very good question. We're in the process of putting together a resource booklet for the friars around the world, which will deal with, we have general constitutions, and chapter 4 of the general constitutions deals with minority. And among other things, it's where, the constitutions deal with the question that you just asked about poverty. And I think it is something that we need to ask ourselves, you know, how do we live our vow today? And I would say that at the minimum, we need to put our resources at the beck and call of, you know, a world that really needs them. I think we have a very good, solid message. The message of Francis is very alive for today. And I think that we, as followers of Francis today, need to look at how we might be able to live those vows in a way where we challenge our world to be different. I mean, when we look around and see all the difficulties with poverty, with hunger, with so many problems that I'm sure you've talked about with many other people already, it would seem that our vow would encourage us strongly in that direction, to be involved in the social problems of our world. We just finished our Justice and Peace component. We finished in January and February a Congress in Brazil, and the title of the Congress was Embracing the Excluded of Today. So I would say that, you know, part of the answer to your question for me would be along those lines, that we need to look and see, as Francis did in his day, you know, because our contention is that a big part of his conversion was his embrace of the leper. And for Francis and for the society of that day, the lepers were the excluded in the very excluded of their society. So we're encouraging our people and also the people that we work with, our cooperators, to read the signs of the times, to see who the poor are today, the excluded are today, and then to do our best to embrace them and to work with all those issues. So I would think that, you know, our vow of poverty at the very least asks us to do that.
Something else I was interested in talking about with Brother Joe is the Franciscans' commitment to acts of nonviolence. I noticed a ticking clock on their website, summing up the millions of dollars being spent every second that goes by on the war in Iraq. That's a vast field of action, I observed. How do you go about it?
I guess it depends on the Franciscan. There's a lot of us around the world, and I think we work on things in different ways. But again, I would say that, you know, the whole issue of the war in Iraq, or that's one of the problems that we face in the world today in terms of violence. I would say that, you know, again, we need to read the signs of the times. What is it that's happening to people? What is it that's affecting their lives? And without question, violence is one of those issues. In 2003, we had a general chapter. And at the general chapter, we, as people from Justice and Peace, presented different proposals to our friars from around the world. And they accepted the five of them. And one of them deals with a commitment to active nonviolence. You know, so the idea is that if you look at Francis and the message of Francis, again, getting back to him, he invites the friars, you know, he tells people, when you go out into the world, greet people by saying peace and all good, you know, the peace of the Lord be with you. And so, you know, we see a big part of who we are and what we do as being a mission or a ministry of reconciliation. You know, so looking at these situations in the world, you know, I was in Africa just recently talking to our friars who work in Justice and Peace. And Africa is a continent that's filled with problems of violence and war. And, you know, so again, if you're honest in reading the signs of the times, it's something that we need to address. It's something that affects the lives of the people horribly in many places around the world. So I would just say that, again, responding maybe even logically to what we see around us, you know, it's a call that the signs of the times make to us. And so I would say that's one of the areas that we need to be aware of.
You mentioned five proposals I observed. Will you list them?
The five different areas were ecology and the way that our lifestyle impacts on the environment around us, the act of nonviolence that we talked about. We had one that includes people that are kind of set adrift in the world, refugees, migrants, the excluded. So there's this whole area of JPIC concerns for us that deals with these people. The fourth area was ethical use of our resources, in some ways especially looking at ethical investment of resources that we have. And then the fifth area was to include JPIC concerns in our institutions of learning. For example, here in Rome, we have a school, the Antonianum, And I've been working this past year with the rector at the Antonianum to establish a course of justice, peace, and the integrity of creation, trying to fulfill this mandate from our chapter to make it part of our institutions of learning. So, if we have people that are studying at Franciscan institutions, we're saying that, as the Church has said also, justice, peace, the integrity of creation is integral to who we are as Christians. It's integral to who we are as Franciscans. So we're trying to make it part of our courses of study.
And that brings us back to the concept of the integrity of creation. That, I think, is probably the main reason why most people are attracted to St. Francis in the first place. To the man who spoke to the birds and the fish and wrote the most beautiful canticle, singing the praises of the sun, the moon, the wind, and all elements of creation. Is that one of the reasons, I asked Brother Joe, why many Franciscans decide to become Franciscans?
I think it's hard to say. You really have to talk, I think, to each individual Franciscan, because oftentimes we're compared to a sack of cats. we're pretty different from one another. And I think the reasons, Francis reached out into many areas of life. And I think for different reasons, people are called to Francis. But without question, I think you're right. I think people are attracted to Francis. One of the big reasons is because of his concern with not necessarily with the environment. For him, it was the canticle of the creatures. Was singing what God has created. And for Francis, the whole issue was when Francis looked at God, he saw all the good things. It's like if you look at Genesis and talks about creation, at the end of every day it says, God saw all these things and it was good. That's the way that Francis saw creation. And so what he was doing, he was celebrating God's love. He believed that the love of God was so great that it just bubbled over, and it bubbled over into creation, and not only creation in general, but very, very specifically creation, So Francis could talk to birds and to fish, but he did it because he saw in them, the God who loved us. So it would be difficult for me to say. For me, that wasn't why I came. But when I came to the Franciscans, I was little. I decided when I was in seventh grade that I was going to go into our minor seminary, which was a long time ago. So for me, I didn't really think through these things a lot. But over the course of my association with the Franciscans and with our way of life, without question, this is one of the areas that really interests me. But at the same time, a lot of times it's Francis who had that interest, and we're still trying to convince all of ourselves that it's important, and all three areas, justice and peace and the integrity of creation, they're woven together. So if you talk about violence, almost always it's not only violence against people, but it's violence against our world, and against creation. So it just seems to me that if you scratch deep enough, you get to all of these issues. I when I worked in Brazil, for example, there was a rubber tapper who was murdered, Chico Mendes, back in '88, I think he was killed, and a lot of people made him into a tree hugger, but he really wasn't. He was very concerned with people, and he loved the place where people lived, and he wanted to protect it. And I think Francis has had that same kind of attitude. The idea of Francis was the world is the place where people live. People are made in the image and likeness of God, and all creation. When you look to Bonaventure, Saint Bonaventure, this whole idea of there's sparks all around us, that show us who God is and how God invites us to be in our world, and it should be a place where everything kind of harmonizes and comes together. And it seems to me that we're getting just the opposite nowadays. Everything just kind of moves away from this harmony with creation and with one another.
It was getting late, and I imagine the director of the Justice and Peace and Integrity of Creation Office must have a lot of work to do in this world. So I thanked Brother Joe and asked for one last reflection on the legacy of the Poverello of Assisi.
After 800 years, the spirit of Francis is still very alive, and he stood for certain things that, you said earlier about how that Francis is your favorite saint, and most people know about Francis, and that's not only Catholics, but non-Catholics too, and many people just love him because of what they see him standing for.
And his gentleness.
Exactly, because he never jumped on top of people to tell them how they should be. What he did, though, he lived that which he believed, and in the integrity of his life, he invited people to be like he was. And it just seems to me that we need a little bit more of that in our world today. It seems like we're usually whacking one another over the head with different ideas or different notions or how people should be. You know, I think we need to remember with Francis that, first of all, we need to be that which we would like other people to be also. And I think that the life of Francis, you know, after these 800 years looking back at him, that his life was an invitation. One of the things that I really liked about Francis, he said, preach sometimes with words, you know, but mostly with your life. Preach with your life, and if you need to, use words. And it just seems to me that really good advice for all of us. You know, if we want something to happen, we need to show people that it's good and that it's important and that it would make a difference in, you know, for us and for our world. And I think that's the kind of example that Francis offers us.
And now Father Jim Brand, Spiritual Director of the Pontifical Beda College, reflects on the deep spirituality of the AA's 12-step program.
Hello, it's Father Jim. Last week, I was pointing out how important the three words you and me are in life, because it is the language of the Father and the Son. And we're given a lifetime to learn how to say these three words. And I was trying to suggest that alone it is impossible. And I'm not talking about domestic arrangements, I'm just saying being totally isolated in this world. Things are not possible, but together, because one and one isn't two, it's infinity, where people can say, you and me. And one of the areas of spirituality that has touched me enormously is the 12-step program. I mentioned before my father was an alcoholic. I'm not myself, but a family that's had alcoholism in it is always affected. And there are various groups for the sons and daughters of alcoholics. Because in an alcoholic home, nothing really seems to be what it is. We gave the impression, as a family, that we were the funniest, brightest, happiest family in the world. Got on well with everyone, cracked jokes. We were the life and soul of all the parties, but behind our front door, there was a deadly secret. We could never invite friends home because we never knew in what condition my father would be. When he was good, he was very, very good, and when he was bad, he was horrid. And as children, we used to sit on the stairs waiting for him to come back from his club after his work. And we'd be nervously, teeth chattering, waiting for that key to go into the lock. And immediately we knew what sort of an evening it was going to be. Heaven or hell. And my father used to sit in one room reading, his nose in a book, being antisocial and getting drunker, while my mother was in the kitchen being Martha, couldn't sit down. And I was the go-between. I was three younger sisters. I was always the go-between, trying to keep them in some sort of contact, my parents. Now, a go-between is a shuttle. You go to one, then you go to the other, then you go back to the other one. And if a plane is on a shuttle service, it doesn't stay long at any one destination before it's all aboard and back again. So it's quite tiring being a shuttle. Also, it's very lonely. because if you're travelling at 2,000 or 5,000 feet, it's very hard for anyone to be on the same phase, at the same height, accompanying you. So I had the most wonderful interior fantasy world when I was very young. You know, there were goblins and elves in the woods, and an amazing imagination. I once had to intervene when my father went after my mother with a carving knife. That's a rather difficult memory at the age of 12. But it did mean that we got caught up in what is a basic dishonesty in alcoholism, and really in all compulsive problems and sicknesses people have. Before Christmas, a van would come when my father was out at work with the booze for Christmas. I remember there were crates of whiskey, crates of gin, crates of sherry. And one year, I think I was 13, I told the van driver, "I'm sorry, he doesn't live here anymore." And the van driver went off. Of course, huge row the next day, why hadn't it arrived? Well, that was rather dishonest of me. And then occasionally I'd drop a bottle accidentally on purpose. Does that mean one bottle less for him to drink? Well, you couldn't win, you just bought another. So there was a lack of honesty in the house with each other, and we were terrified of saying the truth because we'd be contradicted, or it would be another excuse for him to drink. Well, when I was ordained, I, for obvious reasons, found it very hard to help people who were drinking because it kicked up too much stuff in me. Instead of listening to the person, I suppose I'd be thinking, "Oh, I think of your poor wife and children, what are they going through?" Until one day, a man came to see me who had been a real wino, a very angry man. And he had seen two men going into the basement of a church. He'd been sleeping out rough in cemeteries in London. In winter, he found a greenhouse. Well, he followed these two men in, thinking they were going for a handout. And when he got in, he found he was in a big room, about 30 or 40 people, drinking tea. Tea, if you please. So he sat there muttering about, "Oh, God, these do-gooders, tea, how wet. I want booze. Any money? No money here. Oh." Anyhow, he sat there in his dejection, and one of the group stood up to give their story. And he heard himself, because there is an amazing way that an alcoholic alone can be understood well by an alcoholic. Well, he came to see me and was received into the church, and he introduced me to the whole world of the 12th Step program, which I find one of the most deeply spiritual programs in the world, not just for those with compulsions and illnesses like alcoholism or drugs, but for sanity. And since then, I used to give weekends on the 12 Steps to various groups. One of the happiest weekends I've ever spent with people. In the parish I was in, we had a lovely room. We opened it up for a meeting once a week for Alcoholics Anonymous. It was an open meeting, so I could go. And for me, it was my weekly spiritual refreshment. And I soon learned that there are four things about this program and the people I've met that have a lot to teach the church. The first of these four things is this. One, we are all in this together. Alone it is impossible, but together, supporting and understanding each other, we can make it. So even if you've got drink inside you, go straight back to the meeting where you'll be welcomed. And I was amazed how people still suffering, still drinking, were welcomed firmly, but with enormous love, because everyone understood. Secondly, don't look back. It's full of regrets and pain. Our Lord doesn't want us to look back. When the Jews left Egypt, they kept looking back, thinking of the melons and the pomegranates and the leeks and the belly dancers and the pyramids. So they went wandering around in circles. If a ploughman keeps looking back, he goes all over the place. In fact, the Jews only did the hokey-cokey in the desert for 40 years. They put the right foot in and they put the right foot out and turn about because they kept looking back. So the first important point about the church and these wonderful groups is we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, just for today. This is the sacrament of the present moment. Don't start promising you're not going to drink for the next 40 years. Today, just today, a day at a time is what they say. And in the spiritual life, that is very important. Not to start jumping jumps before we reach them. Not always looking back, but to be really present. And in prayer, it takes me a while to become really present to the present moment. Because we all tend to be a bit dissipated. You know, one eyeball's looking one way, the other eyeball's looking the other way. One leg wants to go to France, the other leg wants to go to America, so we do the splits. One hand gives and the other hand takes. It takes a while to find inner composure and for our inner civil wars to find reconciliation. Because God is. Because God always is. He always was and he always will be, but for the moment, God is. My problem is, I want to be here and now rather than there and then. And I have found in these groups such prayer, such contemplation, such inner serenity, which is something they pray for all the time. So firstly, we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, the present moment, just for today. And fourthly, we are all one drink away from ruination. I have never ever heard anyone at an AA meeting condemn anyone else because they're all so poor in spirit, because they're so vulnerable to their first drink. They've been there themselves. They've been to hell, back and forward, sometimes many, many times. Well, that's more than you can say about any group in the church, not condemning. Next week, I'll look at some of the 12 steps and show how amazingly spiritual they are for health of mind and body and soul. But I'll end for now with their favourite prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
That's all from the English feature program today, but we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.